The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
And welcome back to the First Cut Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Kyle Porter, the man himself, as he's preparing, he's packing. Beth Page is coming soon, my friend. I'm Chip Patterson. How you doing?
I'm good. Week before a major is always frenetic. It doesn't feel like it's a major next week, does it?
I'm ready. I think it feels like a major. I think it feels okay. Like a major when I'm getting asked to be a part of a big PGA preview show on Monday at noon on CBS Sports HQ.
Hey, I'll be there too. People should check it out.
You should. CBSSportsHQ.com. You can get the CBS Sports HQ through the CBS Sports app on any of your devices. So yeah, Kyle, I will say that when the moving and shaking starts, you know, when the requests start coming in, when your schedule starts filling up, my body is preparing itself for the next major championship of the 2019 season.
Yeah, I've gotten so used to this rhythm, this major rhythm, major season rhythm throughout the first 6 years of covering this thing that I'm just like, it's so like, you know, it just throws you for a loop when they jam another major. And I like it. Like, look, I'm pro this schedule. I think it's good. I think it's fun. It's just, so, there's just, I feel like we're going to get to the Open in July and be like, that's it. It's over, you know, until the Masters next April. It's a very, it's pretty interesting. I think it's good. It's just, it's very different than what we've seen in the past.
Well, and, you know, ultimately there is going to be a little bit of looking around, a little bit of, you know, what do I do with my hands? Right. And that mm-hmm. just going to be the mm-hmm. kind of just the general feeling among everybody that's, that follows golf on a year round basis. But For this being no longer like the dregs, the fact that we've got this major championship, the PGA championship, which you can see on CBS, like I'm happy. I'm ready for it. I'm excited. Yeah.
No, I am too.
All right. On this date, it is May 8th. What happened on this date, Kyle?
On this date, 1893. So we're rolling it back a little bit. Francis Ouimet was born. And do you know what Francis Ouimet is famous for?
I do not.
He's the first amateur to win the United States Open. He won it in 1913 as a 20-year-old at the country club, Brookline. And he defeated a couple of Jersey boys, a couple of guys from Jersey, Harry Vardon, and I think his name was Ted Ray.
Justin Ray's uncle or grandfather? Can Justin Ray calculate the strokes gained of his uncle in that round?
He probably already has. It was Ted Ray. It was Justin's great grandfather. I don't know why that's so funny. We met was an amateur, first amateur to win the U.S. Open, obviously, like I said. It was so interesting. I was reading about this morning, and in that day, I'll read, there was this one line and from his Wikipedia that I thought was super intriguing. It says, as far as the general public was concerned, amateur golf was reserved for the wealthy, while professional golf provided competition and income for former caddies. Prohibited by the USGA from caddying after the age of 16, or they would lose their amateur status. And so it was just like such a different, you know, Ouimet went on to like be a stockbroker and like it's not golf as we know it. And you know, obviously that's true because it's over 100 years later, but it's such a weird thing to think back on. But yeah, this date, 1893, Francis We Met was born.
Didn't you play Brookline?
No, I haven't. Okay. I have not played Brookline. One interesting thing that I saw about him also, though, was in 1916, so this was 3 years after he won, the USGA stripped We Met of his amateur status. So they said you can no longer be considered an amateur. So like he couldn't play the USAM, which was a big deal back then. That was one of the four majors. That was part of the slam that Bobby Jones won. And its reasoning was that he was using his celebrity to aid his own sporting goods business. He worked at a sporting goods store and was therefore making a living from golf.
NCAA says what's up. Sounds like rebel rags down in Oxford, Mississippi.
The USGA, the forerunner to the NCAA. Oh, incredible.
Who would have known?
they later, which, by the way, what does this say about Tony Romo, amateur golfer Tony Romo?
Profiting off his likeness?
I mean, the Skechers, like, is he an amateur golfer?
No.
Their ruling is that he's better known for football. Like I think they've seriously, like, I don't know if they've put anything out there, but I from what I've gathered or what I've heard,
we've got some Romo talk coming up later in the show. Are you telling me that he's going to have an A beside his name in the tournament this weekend?
I think so. Yeah, I think he's playing as an amateur.
Mm.
I think, I don't know, maybe. Yeah, sure, isn't he?
I'll take it.
Anyway, the USGA later reinstated We Met as an AM after the war, World War I, not to be confused with any of the other wars. So yeah, he later went on to win the 1931 USAM. So he won the 1914 USAM and then the 1931 USAM. So the 1913 US Open was not a one-off deal. Like, he was a good player. So, yeah, good for him. Cool look back at the state in history.
Speaking of look back, we're going to be looking back at the 2010 Byron Nelson. 2010 Byron Nelson Championship. This was back when it was the HP Byron Nelson Championship, as you mentioned last time. Let's see what we got here. This was a Jason Day win.
Yeah, so we introduced this last week. I want to do some of these leaderboard lookbacks because they're super fun. And the reason that I brought up the 2010 Byron Nelson, because we talked about this briefly earlier this week, this was Spieth's first Byron Nelson in 2010. So he was whatever, 15 years old, 16 years old. And he shoots he opens 68, 69, and then he goes 67. So he gets to seven. No, he gets to, what would that be?
Six under.
Six under.
Yeah.
3 days. And the winning number was 10. So he gets to, the eventual winning number was 10. He gets to six under. And then he shoots a 72 in the final round to finish T16 alongside Chris Riley. Shout out to the 06 Ryder Cup team. Steve Elkington. Shout out to his Twitter account. Harrison Frazier, Alex Cheka, Kenny Perry,
woo!
And Jay Williamson. I mean, this wasn't that long ago, but some of the names: Corey Pavin finished T23,
Justin Leonard
T26. I mean, it's Y.E. Yang T32. It's pretty interesting to look back on some of these.
So, is that a young Gary Woodland at T32?
Oh yeah. That was, I mean, Gary Woodland's my age. I think he's 33. So he would have been in his early 20s then.
Wow, Gary Woodland might be ageless. he might have found something.
David Robinson.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So Jason, this was, what point in the Jason Day arc is this? This has got to be early for him, right?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure this was his first win.
Hmm.
So he got 66, 65, 67, shoots two over on Sunday to beat Blake Adams and Brian Gay by two, and Jeff Overton. Scott Verplank, T5 in this tournament. Ben Crane, DJ finished top 10. That was early DJ, too.
Yeah, I know. That was when he was going real low on Sundays.
Yeah, that was DJ tied with DA points and Arjun Atwal for T7. So I could do this all day. I could just look at any leaderboard from over 10 years ago and just be just endlessly intrigued by it.
JJ, Pat Perez, T32.
Yeah, Mark Leishman, T12. That was pretty early in his career as well.
Oh, look, and there's Keith Mitchell. No, I'm just kidding.
So Jordan Spieth has that A next to his name, like his boy Tony Romo will have later on this week.
What's our major fact of the week?
Yeah, I tweeted this out on Tuesday. And I went back. There's been a lot of talk about the, and we talked about it with Sean Martin, the Brandel Koepka thing, and you know what's the deal with Koepka or whatever. And I'm not saying that this is necessarily related to that, but I think that we're sort of underappreciating, and Sean brought this up, and I wanted to go back and get the actual number. Sort of underappreciating what Koepka has done at major championships since the start of 2015. He has finished in the top 20 in 80% of the majors that he's played in. He's had 15 appearances at majors since the start of 2015. He missed two of them, and he's finished in the top 20 12 times. And one of the other ones was a T21. The next closest are Hideki, Jason Day, and Jordan Spieth, who have all finished in the top 20 11 times, but they've all played in 17 majors. So that's just 65%. So he's 15 percentage points better than the second best guys when it comes to top 20s and majors. And maybe top 20 is an arbitrary number. I don't know. But the point is, he's consistently really good at the biggest tournaments that these guys play, or he has been for the last 4 years.
So what is it going to take in your mind for the Brooks, like what is the next step? Let's game this out. Like, how do we see Brooks Koepka performing here at the PGA Championship, at the U.S. Open, and what, like, where does this go? Because he is still occupying his own space, which is decidedly, I would say right now, outside of the, like, have we hit the point where when we said who's number one, none of us mentioned Koepka. We said Tiger, DJ, and Rory.
Yeah. You know, here's what's interesting. I was thinking about this with Koepka. I almost think that he needs to just win a bunch of non-majors.
Mm.
And the reason, and I know that's like, that sounds ludicrous. It sounds so dumb. But like, when you think about DJ and Koepka, their careers, who do you think of as being better?
DJ.
Yeah, right. Even though Koepka has three times as many majors, right?
But DJ has like 18 wins.
He's got like, yeah, 21.
Gracious.
But which is better? Is it better to have 20 wins and one major, or 6 wins, 5 wins and 3 majors?
I think it's better to have 20 wins.
Yeah, right? I don't know. Is it though? Like, what would if you went to say Ben Crane, you went and said, "Hey, you can win 20 times and win one major, or you can win 5 times and take 3 majors. What would you take?" I don't know what he would say. I don't know what any of these guys would say.
I think that as I've continued to plug in a little bit more to the week in, week out golf schedule, the PGA Tour schedule, the professional golf schedule, I think that I have come to value a DJ career a little bit more, just because there's just something about going to all these different, and like what Koepka has done at the tracks where he's done it is very impressive, but there's something about DJ just being able to roll to different parts of the country and go and collect pelts.
I agree. I don't disagree with that. And I guess my overall point is that, like, even though DJ, guys like DJ and I don't know, even like a Justin Rose, even though they haven't won multiple majors, Jason Day haven't won multiple majors, they still have, Justin Thomas haven't won multiple majors, they still have won a lot on the PGA Tour. And so we sort of, I think of them as being better than Koepka, even though he has three times as many majors as all of those guys. So I think Koepka, in a weird way, like, needs some just regular PGA Tour wins to kind of fall back on And I really like, it sounds even dumber out loud than it did when I said it in my head, but I like, just from a perception standpoint, I think that's probably true.
All right. So here's what I this is a good place where I think that we can land on it. I believe that what Brooks Koepka needs is he just needs years to continue to stay in this place, because that's what he doesn't have against Justin Rose. That's what he doesn't have with Justin Rose. That's what he doesn't have against Jason Day, and definitely not Dustin Johnson, who's had like multiple peaks in his career. When you just have been, and again, the world golf ranking system can be crooked and weird, and you know, all the free points at the WGCs, like we love all those jokes, but I have found in the last maybe 8 to 15 months of more of gravitating back towards that as a way of kind of understanding, you know, who's really running the show. And those other guys have just had weeks and months and years where you're just at the top of the game. And that's what Brooks Koepka needs to be able to, because as soon as he levels himself up with like a Jason Day, it's going to be the majors that give him the edge. He just hasn't had that length of time of being at the top of the game.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and that's probably true. So to round out, the other guys that have finished in the top 20 in over 50% of their majors since 2015. So Spieth, Day, and Hideki are all 65% of the time. How about this? DJ and Xander, 63% of the time.
Makes sense.
Xander.
Man.
Xander.
Yeah. Listen, you're preaching to the choir here.
What's up, Xander?
Xander is sick. Xander is here. And that's what Xander, I mean, that is probably, you know, I said it out loud just in the process of our conversation, but that might be a point that I end up returning to, is some of these guys just need time. Justin Thomas just needs time to continue to be awesome. And then all of a sudden we can start to have these conversations.
Yeah, I think you start to apply like what JT does over the course of 10 years and it starts to look awesome.
Right.
But if you take a snapshot from any like 15-month stretch, it may or may not look awesome, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's just that's the nature of golf. To round out the other guys that are over 50%, Finau, Rory, and Rose are all slightly over 50% in terms of top 20s at majors.
Mm.
So that's the list. Ricky Fowler, for people that are wondering, is 47%, along with Paul Casey, Zach Johnson, Patty Reed, Matt Kuchar, and Adam Scott.
I'm sorry. Who'd you say after Paul Casey?
ZJ.
ZJ.
Yeah. The other Johnson.
Can't escape him. All right. We got some news and some expectations for the weekend, or at least what we're hoping, right after this.
You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
So we've got Tony Romo prop bets. That seems silly, but I love it.
It seems absurd. Can you bet on an amateur? Should you be allowed to do that?
Is that what's going to be to violate this status? So what are our prop bets?
So over under 79.5, his first round score is -110. To make no birdies or eagles in round one is +350.
Mm.
Which he's going to make a birdie, right?
Yeah, he's going to make a birdie.
I mean, he's going to make like multiple. This is an easy. I mean, I think I made a birdie when I played it.
Well, like you said, he's a member there too. Or like Sean mentioned, he's a member there too.
Yeah. And then to make one or more birdies or eagles in round one, he's minus 500.
Yeah, I don't like laying minus 500. 70 and a half, I'll go over, but I will go with the eagles. I think, I mean, I will go with the...
No. 79 and a half.
Oh, for first round?
Yeah.
Under?
Yeah.
That's easy.
And it's minus 110. I mean, it's free, isn't it? Isn't that just hook me up to the ATM and start printing the money?
It is.
He's going to shoot like an 81.
79 and a half.
That's high.
That's really high. Oh, to make a hole in one plus 10,000. Yes, I'll take $2 on that.
I mean, it's sort of the, like, his odds of making a hole in one are sort of the same as anybody's, right? It's not like, I don't think his skill from that distance, because so much of that is luck, is that much different than like Koepka or Aaron Wise or anybody like that. Maybe it is. Maybe that's dumb.
And now it's time for our perfect finish prediction of the week, brought to you by Amstel Light. So Kyle, we are going to be doing this every single week. We're going to be trying to conjure up what would be the perfect finish for the tournament ahead. So for the AT&T Byron Nelson, what is your perfect finish?
Yeah, here's my perfect finish. My perfect finish is a couple of guys who live in Texas having a little showdown on Sunday afternoon, a little playoff between Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed.
Oh.
But there's
yes.
There's wouldn't that be a great PGA appetizer? Just Reed and Spieth like pretending like they like each other on Sunday afternoon on CBS. My perfect finish is that Michael Greller comes down with a non-debilitating illness, injury, whatever, that keeps him out for the Sunday round. And Spieth has to call in somebody else who knows Trinity Forest really well, who might be a member there, to carry his bag down the stretch. And Tony Romo's cleaning clubs. For Spieth on Sunday afternoon. How hilarious would that be? I mean, how many memes would there be? It'd be incredible.
There would be so many Amstels being cracked in celebration of just getting to watch that, right? just Romo walking down in his Skechers, giving him way too many tips, right? Like way too much talking from Romo, but he's Rome. Was it Romestradamus? Romo's probably. He's like, I'll tell you what, you know, you can really go easy here because I think looking at Patty Reed's feet, I think he's about to hook this left.
Oh man!
Perfect finish. So who wins in that? Does Spieth beat Reed with Romo on the bag?
I think the dream would be that Reed would win it.
My perfect finish is Jordan Spieth winning for the like beautiful like where it all started is where it can click, because we've talked so much on this podcast about Jordan Spieth and you know. Just watching him grind and knowing the talent and sort of seeing the process makes, if you want to imagine that Jordan Spieth is going to get it together, you can see that it might not take much for everything to fall into place. And why not back at this tournament where he finished T16 or T17 as a 16-year-old, why not there, even though it's not the same course, but why not at this tournament as a spot for Jordan Spieth to get back on the winning train?
Yeah, I like it. And it would set the table for his Grand Slam bid next week at Bethpage.
He just needs the PGA.
Isn't that crazy?
Oh, my gosh.
I know. I forget about it. Because it's like, okay, Rory and Augusta, Rory and Augusta, Rory, you know, you keep talking about filling the U.S. Open, filling the U.S. Open. And it's like, hey, Jordan Spieth just needs a PGA. That's it.
That's it.
That's all.
I loved, because it was the, it was at the 15, it was the 15 season where he went Masters U.S. Open, right?
Yeah, he went Masters U.S. Open, took it to the 71st hole at St. Andrews,
and then went toe-to-toe with Jason Day, and at some point, like, he even said, well, didn't a microphone pick him up, like, because Jason Day was just blackout off the tee and just launching it, and I think that Spieth either said in the post-round or during the course, he's like, well, I'm not going to beat that.
Probably. I mean, he finished top two in all four majors that year.
Right.
It's a joke.
Then he won the tour championship.
Yeah, he did.
PGA Tour Player of the Year, FedEx Cup champion, tour championship. It's like a 4 or 5 win season for him, with a couple of them being majors.
All the money.
Just all of the money. Yeah, I'd love it. I'm here for I'm ready for Spieth to come back. Come on home.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, yeah, he's obviously clearly not playing that well. But, man, I said this after the Masters. Like, I respect the grind so much. Like, there might be too much grind, honestly, mentally. But he's so rich and so successful. Like, I respect the hell out of somebody who is like, I don't care about any of that stuff. I just want to be better than I was yesterday. And I feel like that's where he's at right now. And it's hard to do. Like, not everybody's built like that. And I think that in the end, it will be the primary reason that he has one of the all-time great careers.
All right. End of the week, or at least here on the podcast, we've obviously got the action coming up. So, Kyle, what are you either watching, listening, or reading right now?
So I just finished a book, a fiction book, kind of a murder mystery deal. That makes it sound a lot cheesier than it was. It was really good. It was called Defending Jacob, and it was written by a former lawyer. And so some of the courtroom stuff is really good. Read it in like 2 days. Didn't talk to my family for 2 days because I was just embroiled in this book over the weekend.
In the cross examinations of the story.
Yeah, I was like pacing my living room reading it. But no, it was a really good book. And then I just started a book by Tim Keller called Reason for God, which is, I think, pretty well known by people, but I've never read it, and I am interested to jump into it.
I am unaware. What's the premise?
He just makes a more like intellectual argument for the existence of God.
Gotcha.
And, but from a, so like, I think that most of the intellectual arguments you get are from atheists or agnostics. And so he's sort of making the intellectual argument on the other side, which is fascinating, I think.
Did you watch The Inventor, the Theranos documentary on HBO?
No. Was it good?
It was very, very good, but it was fascinating because I told you I'm reading David and Goliath, the Gladwell book, and he's got a portion of it focused on an attorney named David Boies, who is dyslexic but overcame it to become a very successful litigator. And you know, he's a good speaker. He's a good listener. He famously was on the opposite side of the state of California challenging a marriage law, saying it was unconstitutional.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm watching The Inventor, and David Boies is basically the bad guy in the Inventor, because he is the attorney that is representing Theranos, being very aggressive against all of these employees or former employees that are trying to be whistleblowers or get the word out that things are not exactly as Elizabeth Holmes is saying. And so there's this really interesting audio tape from a Wall Street Journal reporter talking with Elizabeth Holmes and her whole team of lawyers, including David Boies. And you can tell he just has bought in so much on the vision that they're just sort of arguing back and forth over intellectual property law. And so I'm sitting here and Gladwell's putting him up as like, this is a good guy. Think about all he's been able to overcome and what that represents about underdogs. And then I'm watching on the documentary and it's like, boy, this guy was blinded by Silicon Valley like sales pitch. And I got to take that all in at once. But yes, The Inventor on HBO, it's very, very good.
Yeah, I need to check that out. I want to read the book. It's got one of the great titles I've seen in recent years. Bad Blood is the name of the book.
Ooh. Oh, the author. Yeah, the author of that book is one of the primary interviews that they keep coming back to.
But, yeah, I needed to. My wife's very interested in that as well. So maybe we'll check that documentary out. That sounds good.
All right. Any last minute bold predictions before we get out of here?
No, I'm about to jump on a little media call with Mr. Nance, Mr. Faldo, Ms. Balionis. So get their thoughts on the PGA. And I'll tell you this, if Spieth and Reed are in it on Sunday, they might be soaring up the leaderboard. I might just jump in my car and just drive down to Trinity Forest as fast as I can. Especially if Greller has exited the premises and we get the Romo scenario.
I think it's your professional responsibility to do that. He is Kyle Porter. You can follow him on Twitter at Kyle Porter CBS. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Kyle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.